So we're going to do our prayers. Yeah, we usually do all four prayers, right? On Sunday, we do all four? Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Okay. Excuse me. Let's take a moment first to just let our minds come to rest, if they're not already resting. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru for continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms according to the different propensities of beings. Please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. And I'll recite my teaching prayers, the four dharmas of Gampopa. Dadan san shan tam che lo che su drawer zin ji lap tu sol, che lam du drawer zin ji lap tu sol, am trupa sawer zin ji lap tu sol, trupa ye she su charwer zin ji lap tu sol. I pray for blessing, may my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing, may the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing, may the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing, may confusion arise as wisdom, and from the aspiration to excellent conduct. Lai ke dang lu dang ne jin ke chubam dadami ke nam dang dro akunji da ke jitsampar tam che ke du da gicha ten to. In the tongues of nagas, yakshas, gods, those of demons and of humans too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And our reminder for arousing bodhicitta at the beginning of teachings. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. So here we are. Anybody have any? So we're on like our fourth class on the 12 links, originally envisioned as just one or two sessions, but we decided we really wanted to delve into them. And we're doing that mainly through Trungpa Rinpoche's very short book, The 12 Links of Interdependent Origination, which is available as a PDF or for Kindle, as I have it. So we're going to save our summary today. We're going to actually start in the middle of link 4 in Trungpa Rinpoche's book, where he reviews all of the, he reviews the Wheel of Life and the first three links. And then we go ahead with the rest of the links. I just want to make my usual disclaimer with this that I don't consider myself a teacher of this topic, but a fellow explorer, and I'm willing to do a lot of the heavy lifting, but how I explain things may not be completely definitive. So we're just going to work with the materials we have and do our best to sort it out together. And I encourage everybody to just go with like a basic understanding. Like, we may not be able to sort out every single detail or make everything mesh completely, because this is actually a technical. Come out of this with a much better understanding of how this works. And so the basic setup that Trungpa Rinpoche gives us at the beginning is that there are two ways to know things and two sort of branches of Buddha Dharma. The first is how things actually exist, which is ultimate reality, which is what all our practice is directed towards, seeing things the way that they really are. The other way, and we have to become familiar with this in order to see things the way they really are. First, we have to understand how we're seeing things now, which we call the way things appear, which is deceptive. That's confusion. If we believe that the way things appear is the way things are, then we are confused and we suffer as a consequence. That's samsara. But through our practice, gradually, we learn to see things more and more the way they actually exist. First, perhaps through intellectual understanding, and then our practice eventually catches up with that, you know, gradually. So what the 12 links are, like how this fits into the Buddha Dharma and how this fits into our practice, is the 12 links are a roadmap of how things appear, or as I called it, how we create our reality in 12 steps. So how things actually appear is through interdependence. They're not the way they appear. And so the way that we relate to things, especially if we're not clued in, but even if we've been practicing the Dharma for years and years, the way we relate to things sort of viscerally as they appear is to see them as existing as independent phenomena, solid phenomena, permanent things, things that like are the way that they look. And if we think that we're not subject to this, then we can just think back to the last time we lost our temper or the last time we got stuck in depression or stuck in anxiety. You know, those all come about because we are not seeing things the way they really are. So, excuse me. So what we can do as Dharma practitioners, like more and more, is that we get caught up in the reaction. We still get caught up in the reaction of like relating to things the way they appear. But we learn to just sort of take them apart, to do Monday morning quarterbacking. Or maybe now it's Tuesday morning quarterbacking. I don't know. But just to take them apart and analyze them after the fact. And that's great. The point is like to get to the point where we don't get caught up anymore. Like we don't get caught up in emotional reactivity anymore. We don't lose our temper. We don't need to necessarily get beyond the slightest irritation because we our understanding of how things really are kicks in before the reaction can overtake us. So that's actually the point of these teachings, is to learn to understand what is this confusion that we fall into again and again. How does this confusion develop? And then we can catch it earlier and earlier in the process. So let's see. Right. So everything that appears does so by depending on other things. That is how the 12 links work. And Trungpa Rinpoche will explain that more fully as we go along. The 12 links specifically are the Buddha's breakdown of how interdependence works to create this perception of solid reality that that hooks us into our habitual patterns of reactivity again and again. So if we can break that code, this, you know, studying this is about breaking the code so that we can free ourselves from those patterns. We won't necessarily fall prey to our habitual reactions to things. If we can see, if we can really understand how that unfolds, then we can catch it moment to moment reactivity, and in terms of like lifetime to lifetime going around and around and around in the washing machine, as Lama Narla Rinpoche once put it, you know, having been obviously to a laundromat or seen laundry in action. He said, it's just like the laundry going around and around and around. We just go around and around lifetime to lifetime, same habits again and again. So that's the code we're going to break, or we're going to make some, you know, inroads into in this study topic. So normally here I would do some review, especially for anybody who hasn't been able to attend all the classes, but Trungpa Rinpoche does it for us. So where we are is we are in his book, 12 Links of Interdependent Origination. I don't have the page numbers because I have it on Kindle, but we are in link 4. So if you have that PDF, we're in link 4, and it's after, at least in my Kindle, it's are we after it yet? Maybe we're not after it. Maybe we're before it. No, we're after it. Oh, wait a minute. No, we're before it. Right. It's right before the diagram. There's a diagram of the wheel of life and a list of the 12 links. In my book, it's in the middle of the chapter. So we're at the paragraph that starts in the time of the Buddha. I'm going to just unmute you.
Page 12.
Okay, well, I wasn't sure it was 12 or 22. I was like not catching it fast enough. And that's exactly how the 12 links work. You just don't catch them fast enough. Is it 12 or 22? I can't even tell how it appears, much less how it is. All right, so is everybody who has the book, are we all up to speed now? Okay, good. So in the time of the Buddha, the Buddha asked that temples display a drawing of the six realms of existence. In Tibet, this has been formalized in the Wheel of Life paintings, which is, I've sent two diagrams out. This is the one I just sent out. Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you, John, for initiating the process. And thank you, Marilyn, for doing all the work. This is the diagram from Luminous Mind by Kala Rinpoche, greatly magnified because in the book it's teeny tiny. So this is the Wheel of Life. We just don't have the Lord of Death like holding it. Like, so I'm going to pretend like I'm the Lord of Death now. And so this is like how it looked. He's like got the whole thing in his grasp. You'll never see me the same way again. So in Tibet, this has been formalized in the Wheel of Life paintings. These paintings all have in the center a rooster, a snake, and a pig, representing the three root emotions of passion or desire, we might call it. That's the rooster. Aggression, that's the snake. And ignorance, that's the pig. Next is the circle with six divisions. So that's not on this diagram, actually. It's on the other diagram. Has the, does it? Oh, wait a minute. I have three copies here. This one has the six realms around the central emotional poisons. And then next, and that represents the six realms of samsara. And finally, along the outside is a circle depicting the 12 links that lead to samsara. The 12 links that lead to samsara. So that would be a good title too, like how samsara is created. Samsara being our confused reality that we live in, like all the time, except when we're getting, like we do our practice and we get glimpses of how things really are. So now Trungpa Rinpoche is going to lead us links. So the first link, ignorance, is depicted by the image of a blind person. A blind person cannot see and consequently does not know which way to go. So that is like a visual depiction of what ignorance is. Through ignorance, one is not aware of the true nature of reality. And because of this, one wanders in samsara, not knowing which way to go. So that is sort of the definition of wandering, like you don't know where you're going. And that's how sentient beings are always said to be in samsara. We're just wandering. Let me see if I had any other notes on that. All right, basic ignorance of how things really are, basic ignorance of ultimate reality. This is where we can intervene. Like this is that we can intervene right in the first link. We can't intervene in all the links, but there's a few key ones where we can intervene in the process and sort of stop the process. So this is the first one. Like we could stop it from getting underway at all. And how do we do that? We can intervene here through study, contemplation, and meditation. And for those of you familiar with the 37 practices, that's verse 1. to contemplate, to study, contemplate, and meditate all the time without distraction day and night, is just to be as mindful as you can. If we have continuous mindfulness, we will not fall into these traps. Second link is called karmic creations in the book here. We usually call it karmic impulses. They're both good. There's, you know, it's all just a question of different ways to translate the same term in Tibetan. So the second link of karmic creation is symbolized by a potter making a pot. At first, there is a raw lump of clay that goes on the wheel. The potter shapes it with his hands or her hands, and gradually it emerges into the form it will have. But right now, it's just a lump of clay on the wheel. It has not taken a form yet. Similarly, through our karmic creations, like he's talking here, like the karma that we create through our actions, and here specifically our actions in a previous life or a previous, you know, moment, has created impulses that are now coming into play. So he says, similarly through our karmic creations, sometimes good, sometimes bad, we are gradually establishing the pattern of our future. That is the basic capsule teaching on karma. Through our actions now, we create our future. So here what we're talking about is those impulses. Like if we have given into anger again and again in our lifetime, then in the next lifetime, that impulse is going to be very strong. And so we're talking about that impulse awakening. Out of the state of blank ignorance, that, like, our previous karma awakens. So still a lump of clay on the wheel. No definite form yet. So through our actions, we are shaping how our body, speech, and mind will be in the future. So that is Trungpa Rinpoche's summary of the second link. Now I'm going through all of the diagram and list. The third link, consciousness, is very complicated, as we saw, in its conditioning and the way it works. We saw that the eighth consciousness can be quite complicated. Consciousness can be, we didn't really go into detail on his explanation of the consciousness. Is that something that everybody can read for themselves? Or he even has a whole book on it. Consciousness can be good or bad and contains the whole power of the result that will eventually emerge. So the whole picture is there. Like in the consciousness link, the whole picture, we could call it the whole personality, not 100% correspondence, but I think that's a helpful way to think of it. But it doesn't have a definite shape yet, but it's all there. Coming from, it's like the karmic impulse of the second link has now fully blossomed. So, right, the whole power of the result that will eventually emerge. So really in link three, you've got the whole thing, you know, the whole stage is set for everything that's now going to unfold. Because it is so varied, so complicated, this consciousness is depicted by a monkey. And this, Kala Rinpoche called this individual consciousness, which I thought was really helpful. Well, I'm sort of a little more corresponding to personality. Monkeys are continually busy. We don't see monkeys a lot, but so we have to take the word of people who have seen monkeys. Monkeys are continually busy. They swing around in trees and play, getting into lots of things. This is why consciousness is depicted by a monkey. And so, you know, we're going to see it develop, but this is the classic depiction of the monkey in the house with the windows, the five or six windows being the doors of the senses. And so the monkey like sees something that looks threatening and gets caught in that, and out another window hears something that is enticing, so gets caught in that, and so forth. The monkey is always going from window to window, very, very busy. That's consciousness. So we've already got the monkey. The monkey is with us now. And so in the fourth link, name and form, the monkey gets a definite form. So the fourth link, name and form, has to do with the future rebirth one will take. It is carried over from one life into the next, and therefore, this is the first time I've seen this explained, therefore is depicted by a boat that carries one across the water from one land to another, or from one life to another. And so if you look at the picture, it is two people in a boat. And we got the explanation in Luminous Mind, I think it was, that there's two people because one is name and one is form. It's where name joins form. And so what are these? We're actually going to go back to the beginning of Trungpa Rinpoche's explanation of name and form as soon as we finish this summary and see his very clear explanation of the relationship between name and form. So that is why this, oh, wait a minute. Right, from one line to one. In our study of the 12 links, we got as far as the fourth link, which refers to the five aggregates, that's the five skandhas, when they are just beginning to form in the womb of the mother. Important to remember that we're not talking about a person yet, like out in the world. We're talking about an embryo, like just beginning to form in the womb, if you're talking in terms of lives. You know, we can also talk about it in terms of our moment-to-moment behavior and actions, conduct and actions. Although I wouldn't try too hard to make a correspondence with each individual link. Right, so the five aggregates, when they are just beginning to form in the womb of the mother, that is why this link is called name and form. And he's going to explain that more clearly when we go back. Because many of the aggregates are still merely nominal. Their potential is there, but they are not yet active. So we have the five aggregates in a very, very nascent form, like just beginning to take some kind of shape, but they're all there. The potential of all of the five skandhas is here in name and form, but they are not yet active. The links are presented in terms of how what happens in one lifetime determines what the next life will be. In that context, the preceding links, 1 through 3, establish the five, four, establish the five aggregates of name and form in the next life. So at first in the womb, there is merely form. The other aggregates are not very active. The baby, the embryo is very, very busy building a body at this point. So there's not a lot of mental activity, seems to be what he's saying. But step by step and bit by bit, the basis for the aggregates to exist develops and leads to the fifth link. But before we go to the fifth link, we're going to go back to the beginning of the discussion of name and form, which is before the diagram. Is everybody there? It has the heading name and form. Page 12. It's also on page 12. You didn't have to go over my. I'm like many pages back because, you know, my Kindle hasn't got a lot on one page. So the title, name and form, is another word for the five mental aggregates. Name refers to the last four aggregates, meaning the mental aggregates, feelings, cognition, which we usually call perception, mental events, also called mental formations, and consciousness, always called consciousness. So those are the four mental skandhas. So usually in the presentation of the skandhas, we start with form, but here, in terms of how we develop from lifetime to lifetime, or how our actions develop from moment to moment, form is the last one. It starts mentally. Everything starts from the mind. So all the four mental aggregates now join with, because they, four mental aggregates are present in the third, that's consciousness. Consciousness is the last aggregate. It's like the full culmination of the five, the four mental aggregates. So in name and form, in the fourth link, they join with actual physical form. So he says, form refers to the first aggregate. What does this mean? This means that after we have died and have been reincarnated in a new life, we are conceived. And at first, we do not yet have a complete body with all the feelings and mental activities, which very much depend upon the way our body is made up. So a lot of the activity, he's saying, I think, a lot of the activity of the four mental aggregates is going to depend on how the form mostly in potential form. But the karma from our previous life has come to fruition here, you know, in terms of what our mental impulses and so forth are going to be. Form is literally the embryo, the potential for the aggregates. All the genetic potential for the form that is to come is the conditioned potential for the various feelings, conditions, cognitions, and consciousnesses that will emerge once the body is formed. They are present but only nominally. And for this reason, they are called name. Nominally means name. One cannot have the eye consciousness until there are eyes to see and so forth. Okay, so now we're caught up to where we started. We did a little, you know, sort of spiral thing there or circular thing. Now we're going to go to number five, the perceptual entrances. Is that also on page 12? Omigens, I know. We're onto page 13. Okay, the perceptual entrances. There are a lot of words for this. Perceptual doors, perceptual factors, perceptual fields, sense factors, sense faculties. It's what forms the basis for us to have a relationship with the outside world. You know, if we don't have any sense doors, then we have nothing to react to because we react to things through our senses. So to read Taranga Rinpoche here, does anybody have any comments or questions before we go into the fifth one? Okay. The fifth link is the six perceptual entrances or doors, which are the visual faculty, the hearing faculty, the smelling faculty, the tasting faculty, and the physical sensation faculty or tactile faculty. And in the Buddhist, the way this is organized in Buddhism, the mental faculty is also like equivalent. It's so they have six senses, six normal senses, whereas we tend to only recognize five. When the eye organ develops, it will eventually become the basis for visual consciousness. As the ear develops, it gives us the basis for auditory consciousness. And I'm going to bring in a couple other sources that are going to explain this a little bit more clearly than I think it is here. And so on. The 12 elements of perception, which is ayatanas in Sanskrit, for those who have studied the skandhas previously, we may have seen that term, the ayatanas. The 12 elements of perception enable consciousness to arise and to develop within a certain field. For instance, once the visual faculty is working, it enables the visual consciousness, that's like a mental thing, the visual consciousness, to make contact with the things it sees, to explore them and to develop into them. So you got three things going here to allow sensory perception to happen. You have the eyes themselves, like the organs. You have the objects, which we didn't get to yet, but that is actually, the ayatanas are the organs and the objects. So like the organ that allows you to see plus the thing that you will see. And what makes the connection between those two things is the visual consciousness. That's what allows you to, the seeing actually to take place. So here what we're actually talking about, even though I found it confusing, but it's the way it's explained everywhere. I would think that what we would be talking about here would be the visual organ, which is developing, and the visual consciousness, because there's no outside things to see yet. But it's actually the visual organ and the visual object. And we are going to get some explanation of how that works. Okay, so the Tibetan term for these perceptual entrances or sense doors literally means to arise and develop. The eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body perception of touch develop, as does the brain, in the womb. So we're still talking about this embryo. Because these organs will eventually allow our perception of the world to enter, they are called doors of perception or perceptual entrances. The fifth link is depicted in the Wheel of Life as a building with many windows. That's where the monkey is. Now the monkey has the building. The monkey is now contained within the building. With all the windows. So there's no perception yet because we have the eye organ, but the thing that allows the eye organ to connect with visual objects is not developed yet until six, where contact takes place because you have the ability to make that contact. So before we go on, I wanted to read the very short explanation of this fifth link in Sita Rinpoche's Awakening the Sleeping Buddha. This is one of the resources. It's very short everywhere else except in Taranga Rinpoche's book, just a little chapter. This in Sita Rinpoche's book, it's in the chapter on reincarnation and karma, and this explanation is on page 59. The fifth link is sense perception, the six senses. Because of further dualistic division, eye slash form, ear slash sound, tongue, taste, skin, touch, and nose smell become more solidified. This is depicted on the Wheel of Life as six empty houses. So we're talking about the eye and its object, the form, which is form, the ear and its object, which is sound, the tongue and its object, which is taste, the skin and its object, which is touch, and the nose and its object, which is smell. And then I also wanted to read a little more detailed explanation from Kala Rinpoche's book, Profound Buddhism. It's a trilogy of books, not as commonly found as some of his other books. And here we're on page 121. So he calls this the factors of perception. He says, we then arrive at the six factors of perception. Again, we're in the fifth link. Usually one counts 18 factors in perception, not just six. In this analysis, however, the six sense organs, the six sense consciousnesses, and the six sense objects are taken together. So those are the individual components, and we're just referring to the whole sense field that is being developed here. The eye is associated with visual consciousness and external objects that it perceives. The ear is associated with auditory consciousness and sounds. The nose with olfactory consciousness and smells, and so on. However, in the Bardo, the body and external environment, as they do not possess any physical foundation, are all reduced to mind. This is all just mental activity. The sense organs are not materially present, no more than external manifestation is founded on material reality. The mind alone creates the impression of a body and an external world. Therefore, one speaks only of six factors of perception. I hope that helped and wasn't just confusing. Lama Jinzong, I'm going to unmute you.
Sorry, because I was busy writing down in all of this, but mm-hmm. but what you just said now, the whole thing about, is it necessary, like, I'm not sure where it was going there, but the idea is, like, when we dream, we have all of these
right.
six, we have all of these perceptions, and it's proof that with the, that without any of our actual organs right. functioning while we're sleeping, you know, we're not literally yeah. smelling with their nose or touching, yeah. that it's clear that it's completely within the mind. And that I'm just sort of introducing something that comes up later, but I mean, it came up earlier when it talks about name and form, but the separation of that, even though in the womb, when you still have the, like when he was talking about, you have this potential, like the potential for body and potential for whatever, that it really isn't dependent on anything physical. It really is mental. And this idea that will come up later is that the sensory consciousnesses, even though they say they're sight, there's no actual mental perception taking place at the same. They're not in any way conceptual. It's always that it's then like the mind, you know, the sixth consciousness comes in and it has like an image or an idea. That's what it has, an idea about what the sensory perceptions were, and then it creates all the thoughts about it. So it really isn't about anything to do with anything physical.
Yeah, we haven't made contact yet. Actually, this is going to be explained further in the next section on contact. But thank you very much for bringing in the dream example again, because I think that really clarifies things like how it can all be mental at this point, but you can still have a sense of that the whole sensing function is operational. Because in a dream, same thing, there's nothing outside.
But I think lastly, and then I'll shut up, is just sure. this idea that, you know, when you had posed the question to us a while back about you know, from mm-hmm. birth to death to life to rebirth, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But this is how to see, like when we talk about how is it actually going on in momentary, from moment to mm-hmm. moment, is that we're not necessarily talking about anything that's fully formed in terms of the physical thing, that this is all metaphor for the stages of mental processes mm-hmm. that's taking place.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how you can apply it to our moment to moment. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So thank you. Does anybody else have anything at this point? Any questions or comments? I'm going to leave Loma Jinzong unmuted and unmute Patrick.
Hi. I was wondering about the function, the process of like association. Like, you might hear a sound like a car horn, and it makes you see a car.
Yeah.
You know, or all the other organs are kind of, I mean, the senses also sort of get mixed up with each other based on one kind of input. Do you get what I mean?
But it don't. Oh,
no, go ahead.
But again, that's a perfect example, Patrick, of it has nothing to do with the car. And the car, the idea that you're saying you think you see a car, you're not actually seeing a car. You're just having an idea of a car arising as a thought in your mind.
That's what it seemed like to me, too.
Yeah. Yeah, good point, Patrick. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. So we are going to go on to the sixth link contact. And I have a hope, we have 20 minutes left. I have a hope that we'll get through 6 and 7, which are they're relatively short and easy to understand, because in within 7, Chöndra Rinpoche starts to talk about how these links function together, like as groups. And it's a really helpful discussion to start to see what the point of this teaching is. So again, there's going to be a lot of technical aspects to this, and we may not understand everything perfectly, but we're planting the seeds for it to unfold, like as we study, contemplate, and practice more. So if you feel like you haven't completely grasped one of the links or how the links relate to each other or whatever, just don't worry about it for now. You know, whatever you come out of this with is going to enrich your understanding, and then through your study, contemplation, and practice, everything will continue to unfold. So, contact. The word contact has a very precise meaning here. It means the contact of the faculty, the 5 sense faculties and the mind faculty, with its object through the link of consciousness. So again, consciousness is the visual consciousness and the auditory consciousness are what link the organ and its object. So now the contact is being made. 3 things are happening simultaneously. There is an object, there is the faculty, and there is the link in consciousness. So the object is the thing you see or hear. The faculty is the organ, the eye or the ear, and the consciousness is what links them together. For instance, there is an object. Oh, well, now I'm explaining what he's about to say. For instance, there is an object to be seen, the visual faculty and the visual consciousness. When those 3 are present simultaneously, then visual consciousness is working. Once the perceptual entrances develop, perceptual entrances being those sense capacities, sense faculties, the eyes of the fetus in the mother's womb can see visual things. So there is visual contact. The ears can hear things, so there's auditory contact. The nose can smell things, so there's olfactory contact. The tongue can taste flavors, so there is the taste object. And the body feels sensations, heat, cold, and so on. So there is physical contact. The mind reacts to those things with various feelings and thoughts. Or as Patrick says, associations, and Lama Jinzang also gave us the example of the dream state. The mind reacts to those things that we are perceiving with various feelings, thoughts, and habitual patterns. So there is mental contact based upon the physical sensations. There are 2 points about contact. One is that the 3 factors of faculty, object, and consciousness come together. So for a sense perception to occur, those 3 things all have to be operating at the same time, simultaneously. The second is that once the outside sensory object, the sensory organ, and the consciousness associated with that organ come together, we have an experience of the outside world, which gives rise to the 7th link feeling. So is that reasonably clear to everybody? We've got the senses in place, and now the senses are making contact in some way with external phenomena, or within the dream with phenomena that appear to be external but are not really. Are we ready to go on to the 7th link? In the chain of the 12 links of interdependent origination, 1 link gives rise to the next link. One could also say that each link is the cause for the next link to arise. And again, we can go back to Kala Rinpoche and see that thing where he says that they're not they're not cause and effect, that they all have to be present simultaneously, and we can continue to take that as a koan. But here, Trungpa Rinpoche very clearly explains that one link gives rise to the next link, and each link is a cause for the next link to arise. And that is, I'm not saying that there's a conflict there. I think there are two different ways of explaining or approaching the same information. But for now, we're working with Trungpa Rinpoche. Once there are the perceptual entrances, there can be sensory contact. And once there is contact, the feelings arise. These feelings can be pleasant, unpleasant, or indifferent. So, for instance, when the eye sees something that is beautiful, that creates a pleasant feeling. If the visual faculty sees something ugly, something ugly, an eyesore, then there is an unpleasant feeling. Eyes can also see things that are not particularly ugly or beautiful, and then there is a neutral feeling or the feeling of indifference. So here's a very important sentence. The raw quality of feeling good, bad, and indifferent is the seventh link, feeling. So in link four, we got name and form. We have the whole basis for all of this to take place. In the fifth link, we have the six senses developing. In the sixth link, we have contact. And in the seventh link, through that contact, we feel a certain way. We feel it's pleasant, we feel it's unpleasant, or we don't care about it. We feel it's neutral. Feelings such as those of compassion. So here he's saying compassion is one kind of feeling we could have. We could see something that arouses compassion in us. And if compassion arises, that leads to good karma. Feelings such as hate can lead to negative karma. The 12 links, okay, so that's it. That's the explanation of the seventh link. That's a pretty easy one to understand. So now we have kind of a whole ball of wax, the first seven links. Once the second link kicks in, like in first link, we did not become enlightened. We did not remain in awareness. We fell into ignorance. After we die, it's said that we fall into the, a period of unconsciousness. If our child awareness doesn't meet the mother awareness, if we don't have a continuity of awareness, we fall into a blank state. And that blank state, then we get the karmic impulses. And once the karmic impulses kick in, it's all going to happen. Like through seven, it's all going to happen. Like there's no intervention there. So the only possible intervention would be to be prepared for that ignorance, for that moment of death. You're prepared for the moment of death. You've practiced your heart out through your whole life, and your awareness makes the leap. If it doesn't happen, then those first seven are just going to happen. So now Trungpa Rinpoche is going to explain how the links work together. Time before we have to end. So the 12 links can be grouped in various ways. Looking at these links globally, like the crow's eye view, the bird's eye view, the first two links of ignorance and karmic creation are the cause for the next five links of consciousness, name and form, the perceptual entrances, contact, and feeling. Once ignorance and karmic impulses are in place, everything else unfolds automatically. This means that through the main root of ignorance, we made the karmic creations in former lives. So the karma, the karmic impulses are created through ignorance in our previous lifetime. So through the main root of ignorance, we made the karmic creations in former lives, which then kick in link two and give rise to links 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in this life. In other words, our present consciousness and the links that follow, that's link three, are conditioned by previous ignorance and karmic conditions. The way that consciousness is imprinted determines the fourth link of name and form. Oh, and name and form in turn give rise to the perceptual entrances. Due to the perceptual entrances, there is contact. With the external perception of contact, the sense organ and the consciousness is coming together. We get the seventh link of feeling. Each link leads to the next, but in terms of a larger view, the first two links relate to past lives. and then give rise to the next five links, which have to do with this life. Is that clear to everybody? Because that's important information. And it will help us understand how we can intervene in this process and use it to free ourselves. And I would suggest that everybody reread this before the next class. Like, go over it again. This is the study part. Contemplate it. This is where we think about it and make sure that we understand what Trungpa Rinpoche is saying and compare it with our own experience and decide if we agree with it. Like, does this make sense to me based on my experience? And we meditate, and that allows it to internalize. And the result of that is that we understand it better. So it doesn't stop here with just listening to the teaching. Please engage with this. If you wish to understand this and be able to use it in a practical way, then please continue to study it. Read it again. I will be reading it again myself. Each link leads to the next. But in terms of a larger view, the first two links, I already read that. Okay, the first two links relate to past lives and then give rise to the next five links, which have to do with this life. In their turn, these five links, that's consciousness, name and form, sense perceptions, contact and feelings. In their turn, these five links are the basis for how one acts in this life, which will then create future lives. There is a constant play of causality on smaller and greater levels. Again, the seventh link is feeling. When we have a pleasant feeling due to contact with the objective world, there arises a sense of need. If it's a pleasant feeling, it's something we want. And so in a future link, we're going to go after it based on that sense of need. When one has pleasant feelings, one wants to maintain or continue them. This leads to the eighth link, which is grasping. He calls it grasping. It's called craving in our diagram from Luminous Mind. And then grasping is the ninth link. So craving and grasping are very closely related. We're not going to go into them today, but you can see, let's just say, I'm just going to play with this a little bit and not try to make it correspond too much, but to bring it into our moment-to-moment reality, I think we're seeing how it operates lifetime to lifetime pretty clearly. So you're just la-di-da-di-da, you know, just going through your day, kind of neutral, nothing much happening, and then you see the billboard with the ice cream, and you're into play. You know, it's still on the potter's wheel, it's still a lump of mud, but it awakens it from the state of not thinking about ice cream. Suddenly you're thinking about ice cream. Or somebody looks at you wrong, like somebody doesn't smile at you. You smile at them and they don't smile at you. That's like an example Mingyur Rinpoche uses sometimes, I think. And you get a feeling from that, like you feel disrespected, you feel like there's something wrong. Like, what's wrong? Why are they not smiling at me? That's your karmic impulse. You built that up in previous lifetimes to react. When somebody doesn't smile at you, you think there's something wrong. Or you get irritated or you get anxious. Or you see the ice cream somewhere. You see some reference to ice cream and now you want the ice cream. And so then, wham, like dominoes, all of those other dominoes are going to fall until we get to like the eighth link, like the feeling of ice cream, pleasant, or a person not smiling, unpleasant, or possibly threatening. And then that's where our full-blown emotional poison kicks in. Like we want it or we are angry about it. And that's where we're going to be able to intervene. That's what all the Dharma is about. It's first of all, it's about one, you know, study, contemplation, and meditation, how to overcome ignorance. Like that's the global thing. But we can also intervene at link 8. We are learning all of the methods we're being taught are how not to get hooked by that feeling of craving or that feeling of aversion. So we are now at the eighth link, grasping or involvement. I encourage everybody to A, review everything up to this point. And then B, read ahead, like read, learn about grasping or involvement and think about that. Grasping or craving, whichever it's called, read ahead the next few links and think about that. Like how does that work? Can we see that? Compare it with your experience over the next week. We'll be back next week, although I'm not sure we'll be on Zoom next week. I'm going to be actually in DC next week. So I'm not sure if we'll talk about whether we can actually Zoom live or whether we'll just make a recording and make it available to everybody for next week. But study ahead and really start comparing it to your experience, and that will make it much easier in the context of the class, the study of the class, to for it to go in. So anybody got a question? Yes, Joanne.
You mentioned, may I assume that the prior class that I missed was also recorded?
Yes, and it was.
Where do I access it? I can't do the site where it says Two Awakenings, which is Gompopa. Where do I access that recording?
I have actually sent that link out a couple of times, I think. Does Mark or John want to respond to that? I'm going to unmute both of them. And okay, anybody got, I think I have the link, right, Mark? You've sent the link for...
Yeah, we've sent it. There's a general link, which is just kdc.org.
Right.
/Zoom.
Yeah.
I got you.
And then
okay.
From there you can get to the other stuff.
Okay, I'll find it again and send it out again, but it will apply to all of these classes. You can find all of them there.
Thank you, Lama.
Good question. Good to have that information out there, Joanne. Anybody else have anything? A question, a comment? Kathy Senegal. You're unmuted.
Okay, thank you. On link number 5.
Yeah.
It references a Tibetan term for the perceptual entrances. What is the Tibetan term?
I don't know what term they're referring to there. I didn't look
at that. Okay.
Sorry. Mark, yeah.
Yeah, I've been looking around for other references because some of the thing, especially the thing about past lives, to me is confusing because what I've understood about past lives is that it's very, very difficult to pinpoint cause and effect. Because
right.
There's so
yeah.
many, during a lifetime, there's so many yeah. different causes and effects, you know?
Yes.
So, anyway, there's a Francesca Fremantle who says that one way you can work with this is to go backwards. So when you're at the final link, you're really attached, or you're in your death kind of throes of it. But if you go backwards, it goes back to... just ignorance or lack of awareness of the true nature of things.
Right.
So if you kind of look at it backwards, you can kind of unravel.
And certain links you can't directly affect. I might be wrong, and I'd be curious. Francesca Fremantle was a student of Trungpa Rinpoche, and she co-translated the Tibetan Book of the Dead with him. Is that the source you're using, or is there another source?
That's the source, yeah. It's a webpage, though.
In the introduction, or maybe it's within the text. I'm mostly familiar with the introduction of that book, which is brilliant, the brilliant explanation of the skandhas.
Yeah. So can I ask you another quick?
Yeah, sure. And then I'll get to you, Patrick.
The question was, can you say more, a little bit more about the eighth link and how that gives you I guess you can realize that you're grasping and then just let go. Yeah. That's what it sort of.
I think I'm going to just suggest that everybody read that section because we're out of time, and I did promise I would finish by one in future. We're going to leave that for next week, but everybody can explore that on their own in all of these sources. You have the Trungpa Rinpoche. If you have any of the Kala Rinpoche books or the Sitra Rinpoche book, you can look it up there. And just look at your own experience. Like, where does feeling turn into grasping? Where does pleasant turn into I must have? Like, just watch your own experience. It's probably the single most useful thing you can do besides read Trungpa Rinpoche. Okay, thank you, Mark. Patrick, you had something?
Oh, sorry to bring this up at the last minute, but is there a situation where, like, a miscarriage in early first trimester, for example, would that be a reprieve from samsara or a negative complication?
I'm not really qualified to fully answer that. I have to plug my computer in, which I forgot to do earlier. I'm not really fully qualified to get into that level of technicality, and we also don't have time, as you know. Lama Jinsung, if you have a very, very, very short, because I did promise I'd be done by one.
I would say that you can never think of a death in this case, which a miscarriage, an early death, as being any kind of reprieve. Unless you're saying that consciousness that's within that capsule of embryo is somehow enlightened and is choosing to not go further in the process, I don't think you can begin to question whether it's a reprieve or not in an ordinary sense. I think it's like...
Oops, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Anyway, I would say that's like, you know, a very shortened lifespan is how I would relate to that. Just saying that.
Okay. Well, actually, I mean, Lama Norlorimbaje has been asked this question long, long ago in the past. And basically the idea is that it takes an awful lot of good karma to get a human birth and then to have it cut short. The specific question was about abortion. To have it cut short, he said that consciousness is going to the hell realms because they've used up all of their good karma to get the human birth. And then they didn't get to have the human birth and create, you know, accumulate merit and purify negativity and so forth. So I don't know that that's the definitive answer. Again, I don't have a lot specifically to go on, but that was what Lama Norlorimbaje said specifically about abortion. I would think it would also apply to miscarriage. You got your human body and then you lost it. All right. Anybody else before we go? Oh, yeah, Lama Jinsung.
I think it's also not so simple because obviously the connection is between the parents, you know what I mean? It must have to do with the whole karmic thing also, mm-hmm. of the mother and all of that stuff, that it's not even singly to that individual. It's so complicated. It's probably really bigger than that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, in The Torch of Certainty, John Gongchul famously says, don't expect to understand how karma works until you get to the first bhumi, like the path of seeing. We went through all that with Gampopa. When you see and understand emptiness directly in your own experience, you can understand karma. And until then, what we have to go by is, you know, all we can really understand about karma is good, positive actions lead to happiness and negative actions lead to suffering, and practice leads to liberation. So thank you very much for your help answering that, Lama Jinsung. And I think we have to stop here because it is a little bit after 1 o'clock. So next week I'm going to just unmute Marilyn and Patrick. Can we have like a minute to just talk about next week you didn't unmute. Okay, now you're unmuted. Since I'm going to be there, do we want to try Zooming or is it better to just leave it and have audio?
Well, recording? I'm not a technical person, but you could be sitting on your computer and it could be facing you.
Yeah.
Not confused, we can sort of do it, only the only difference is your computer and you will be here.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, you can be sitting at the little table. Yeah. And I think it'll work.
Okay. Well, we'll give it a whirl then. We will give it a try and we'll have John there and Mark there and they will help us troubleshoot I don't see any reason there should be difficulties either, except sometimes there's wireless challenges or connection challenges or whatever. All right, so we'll try to Zoom next week, and I'll let you know if, yes.
Everybody else is welcome to come.
Okay. Everybody's welcome to come to D.C. All right, well, hopefully I'll see everybody next week. And now we will do our prayers. Okay, have I muted everybody? Yes. Okay. All right, let's do the dedication of merit. Again, taking a moment to let our minds settle and just visualize all sentient beings in all the six realms, and that we are dedicating any benefit from this study, contemplation, and meditation, such as the meditation was, to their enlightenment. This merit may it win omniscience, defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddhakayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. And let's let our minds come to rest again for a moment. And now you're all unmuted, and we shall go forth into the world somewhat enriched in our understanding, and hopefully carry our resting mind with us into all our activity today and beyond.
Thank you so much, Jujun.